biggest opportunity DIY's had to this point to retain their championships.
By the NXT Universe into this match.
Make the Petrovites for NXT to take over!
Against who?
On all them!
What are you studying for?
I have a marketing exam tomorrow morning. It's essentially this class that's compressed. It's 14 weeks of classes compressed into three. So
wow.
We have an exam once a week on six chapters of reading. So yeah, I've been just reading mindless marketing material for like the entire day. So this is watching some NXT and talking about it will be a welcome change of pace for me.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't feel like doing this week alone, so I figured I'd hit you up. So here we are.
Thank you for doing so. How has your week been so far?
Not too bad. My life for the last week has been consumed by New Japan and a show I've been watching called Man in the High Castle on
Amazon. I've heard
Amazon.
Good things. Yeah, is it good?
It's awesome. I mowed through the two seasons in like 3 days. It's really good. I have the finale basically to watch probably as soon as we're done with this.
One of those alternate reality. It's like if Germany won World War II or something like that.
Yeah, that's more or less where it is. It takes place like roughly early 1960s, I guess, in an America that's divided up between. Like, basically, the Japanese have control of everything west of the Rockies, and the Germans have control of everything east of the Rockies.
I'm such a sucker for those alternate history stuff, so yeah, I know I gotta check that thing out soon enough.
Yeah, definitely look into it. It's like, obviously it's a show or whatever, but there's like an uncomfortable amount of swastikas, like in the first episode, like they're really driving it home.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Once you get over that, like, it's written in such a way where, like, you basically start forgetting that these people are Nazis, and, like, you start feeling bad for them and their characters. Like, it's weird. Like, you're oh, God, like, why did I just say that? Like, you know.
it's good writing if they're able to make you empathize with Nazis, of all people.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, not a Nazi sympathizer usually, so
it's not my normal wheelhouse. Yeah, me neither.
But yeah, all right, I guess do a little pre-show banter. I did have a couple things here I wanted to talk to you about in particular. I haven't talked to you in a while, actually. So New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom, did you watch it, and do you have anything to say about any match other than Okada and Omega?
Yeah, well, naturally, it's nice that you would ask other matches besides Okada and Omega, because while that match deserves every bit of praise that it is getting, it is easily one of the best matches I've ever seen. I hate the whole it's the best match I've ever seen thing, because I don't know how to do that. I just haven't seen enough matches to quantifiably say that. But of course, outside of that, saw the rest of the card, top to down, just an awesome show. I mean, God, that co-main event, I watched the co-main event with Tanahashi and Naito, and I was like, how in the world are Omega and Okada going to outdo this? Because the story being told in that match was so good. You know, what with this is Tanahashi's, you know, just one of his last times. His career is starting to wane, and he's got to get this big win, but, you know, Naito won't let him do it. I mean, it was just so much good on the show. I was really actually impressed by a match that not a lot of people are talking about, disappointingly enough for me, and that was Cody versus Juice Robinson. I thought that Juice Robinson was great. I think that he's slowly getting over at New Japan. I haven't seen New Year's Dash all the way through, and I hear that he goes over pretty well in New Year's Dash, so I look forward to seeing that. I think that he was a wasted talent in NXT, and I'm really happy to see him doing well in New Japan, but I'm sure that you've talked about it in the past, so I don't know if you want to belabor your thoughts about the rest of the card, but, I mean, yeah, go ahead. I'd like to hear what you thought.
I am like a massive Kushida mark. So that match between him and Kamaitachi or Takahashi, I guess, as he's back now doing that. And I love all things Los Ingobernables. So the fact that they all walked out with titles was really cool. And you know, like I said, that Takahashi Kushida match in particular was epic. Like I mean, that could have main evented a lot of shows, particularly over here you know, on this side of the world. But yeah, I mean, those are, Kushida's a guy, like, if we don't get to see him in the cruiserweight division in WWE at some point, I'm going to be really bummed. Just even if it's like an Ibushi type role, like where he just pops in for a couple like big matches. But I love, you know, him and Naito obviously putting on a hell of a show, winning clean over Tanahashi too.
Yeah,
like,
surprised to hear that. Yeah, I'm surprised. Yeah.
That's big for him. And then, I mean, you haven't gotten to New Year's Dash yet, but, you know, there's just some sort of, that show is just bizarre. Like, it's yeah, like the total opposite of what you would expect.
I remember we were talking about it on Twitter, and I've watched it in the past, and I just haven't, you know, I normally watch the New Year's Dash afterwards, but it's just been a real busy week for me. But, like, I know, it's, I like the format of New Year's Dash, how it's always just right after Wrestle Kingdom, you know, it sort of gives off the feeling that Wrestle Kingdom is really a finality for a lot of those feuds. Like, it shows the immediacy of it's time to move on, it's time to establish new stories, you know, promote new guys, establish these kinds of things, and just really quick turnaround from Wrestle Kingdom. I really enjoy that aspect of it. I like it. It's a lot of, I saw that we were comparing it to like the Raw after WrestleMania on Twitter, and it's like, the Raw after WrestleMania, it's they both build new stories, but they reference a lot of what happened last night. I like the fact that New Year's Dash is just that. It's a dash forward right into the new year, and it's time for new programs, and it's time to build towards the next pay-per-view, and I like that fact.
Yeah, I've really sort of fallen in love with the way that New Japan books. They have long-term storytelling down pat in a way that WWE, I don't think, will ever quite catch up to. But for that reason, I was one of the few people who thought Okada was going to win that match, because the story is ultimately going to be Omega getting back to that spot and taking over Okada for a while. Then the story will ultimately be like, holy shit, Omega's on top running things for a year. Like, what do we even do in New Japan with Kenny Omega like running at the helm? And then Okada will overcome him ultimately again, because he's the ace and he's their guy. But like, that's something that they probably have like a 3-year storyline built up with that, which is why Kenny Omega is not coming to WWE. Everybody, calm down.
Yeah, it's surprising to me how many people thought that was legitimate. I mean, guys, of course it's a work, guys. I mean, because it's I thought it was obvious, but I mean, I guess there is validity in the fact that his contract is up sometime soon, but there is no chance that he is signing anywhere else.
Yeah, at least another couple of years. Like, he's already gonna be, you know, like one of the great gaijin wrestlers over there, and he might end up, you know, if he does go through that whole progression that I kind of just went through, like, he could end up having like one of the, you know, more significant gaijin storylines over there ever. And that's you know, that's a big deal for him in particular. Obviously, he loves the culture and the audience and just the whole, you know, Japanese wrestling scene out there. So I think he's got a lot more to prove over there. And frankly, I'm in no rush to get him in WWE anyway. Like, they're not going to let him be awesome over here. He's just going to be, I don't know, Dolph Ziggler by a year in.
He's too much money over there anyway. I mean, the dude can speak fluent Japanese. He's the leader of the Bullet Club, leader of the Elite. I mean, they've invested so much in this guy. I mean, they're not letting him slip through their fingers for a good long while. This is not going to be an AJ Styles situation, I don't think so at all. I could see him staying there for 2-3, upwards of 5 years, really. I think that he really wants to build his career over there. He said as much.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to sort of the storyline that they were building there, and that New Japan's going global. Like, they're going to do the G1 in California for a couple of days. They're doing like more shows over here. They're trying to make this a bigger market, and not for nothing, having a white guy as the face certainly makes it a little easier to digest for some people anyway over here. You know, that's part of the deal, is that, you know, Okada is Okada and he's great, and frankly, his wrestling is, you know, speaks a universal language. But for people who aren't like super wrestling marks, and maybe they're just trying to draw a casual eye in, maybe Okada's not the face for the North American expansion for New Japan, and Kenny Omega could very well be that guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially it's salient to look at the fact that Omega has been the focus of the talks after the match, when it was just as much an amazing performance from Okada as it was from Omega. But of course, Omega's getting most of the press, so I think that you make a great point there.
Well, thank you. And all right, so enough New Japan for now anyway. This is an NXT podcast, guys. But we have the little bit of information that I saw that leaked as far as the new tapings. This is sort of stuff. I try to avoid spoilers at all costs. I don't know if you've read them. If so, try to keep them off our airwaves. But
I do not read spoilers, my friend. I am a TNA fan. If I read spoilers, I could not watch the show.
Yeah, that's true. You could go like 6 months without watching anything. But
exactly.
So the two big points that I saw coming out of NXT is that Tommy End has debuted during the tapings, and he has a new name, which is Aleister, Aleister Black. So my first thoughts are that first name's going the second he goes to the main roster, and I guess that just makes him Black. I don't know. That's going to be interesting because Vince hates first names, particularly ones that start with an A. And I thought that was an interesting thing. Do you think, I don't know how much you know about Tommy End, but I thought that there was might be something to them. They had to change the name because of a very infamous, very profane chant that tends to follow Tommy End all over the world.
And that's definitely got to be the reasoning behind the name change. But man, I'm disappointed to see it because I think Tommy End is it's a great wrestling name. It's short, it's blunt, it's memorable. Aleister Black. Aleister is like, it's like, what was that Harry Potter? I am terrible at Harry Potter, but wasn't there like a guy that was like similarly named? I don't know. It sounds like a name that comes out of Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, it does. I know exactly. Yeah, not exactly what you're talking about, obviously, because I can't come up with it. But yeah, no, that's a very Harry Potter name. Yeah, maybe that'll be his gimmick.
I could see that's very WWE, but I don't know. I know NXT will do him right, and he's a talented guy, so I have no reservations about it, even if he does have a stupid name.
Fair enough. All right, and then the other big NXT news, obviously, Chris Hero, Cassius Ohno is back. And it looks like he's going after Nakamura for at least a brief title stint. I know we saw Eric Young kind of come in and do this with Samoa Joe. I haven't seen the spoiler, so I don't know if this is like a long program or if this is just like I'm popping in, I'm going to get this one title match to kill a couple weeks of TV and get out of here, or you know, maybe stick around and just fall way back down the card like Eric Young has. But that's big news, I guess. He's still Cassius Ohno. What do you think? What do you make of all of that?
I think he's such a talented guy, and I mean, he's put on some amazing matches over the years, especially in PWG. And I worry about his look. I really do. And that's to say, I'm not a big fan of his look, to be completely honest. I think that he was great as Cassius Ohno, and I'm sure he's going to put on some great matches this henceforth in NXT. But I mean, the dude has got a hell of a gut, and it's like, goddamn, it's not like I have to look at Kevin Owens' protruding gut every Monday Night Raw. At least he covers it up. It's like, man, he doesn't look great, and I don't know if they're gonna tell him to slim down, they're just gonna tell him to rock it. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the dad bod that he's rocking these days?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need my wrestlers to look like Adonises necessarily, but like throw a shirt on the guy, like, you know, like, what? There's no benefit to having him out there shirtless.
I'm definitely not a guy like, I'm not a Vince that's like, oh, they all have to be chiseled and all that, blah blah blah. Not at all. But it's just, it's very distracting. I don't know. It's not like he's just like a big guy, like a big Damo or Braun Strowman or something. You know, it's like, yeah, these guys would have bellies that protrude, but it's not like it's bouncing up and down or something. I don't know. It's just, maybe I'll get over it, but I know that as he continued to get bigger after he left NXT, I was continuing to be like, man, this is just odd.
Right? Yeah, it's almost like he went the other way with it. He's like, I'm just going to get fatter and prove that I could still get over. Fuck them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and so shockingly enough, that worked.
Yeah, he's back. They're paying him now. Vince is signing his checks. So, I guess, haha on them. One last little thing I wanted to touch on with you in particular, as our resident TNA expert, Mark Andrews announced for the UK tournament. Last minute entry of sorts. He wasn't in the original brouhaha, but it looks like they've managed to procure him for this tournament. Your thoughts on Mark Andrews in the WWE moving forward, his departure from TNA, apparently. I wasn't even aware of that. What do you got?
If it is a finality with TNA and he's done over there, I'm disappointed in how they used him over the years. I mean, he was there as part of their British talent search, and he's been with the company for a long time, and they failed to do much with him. He had like a skateboarding gimmick for a little bit. He's over the past year, he was just thrown into a bunch of different X Division matches with no storylines and no plan for him going forward. And I love the guy, and I think he's super talented, and he put on a lot of good spots, and he did some really good stuff in TNA with what little he was given. Disappointed to see him go from a company that I obviously hold in relatively higher regard than I think most do, and I really enjoyed Impact over the past year. So I think that they could have done some really good stuff with him going forward in 2017, but at the same time, They gave me no reason to think that they would, because even as good as 2016 was, they still misused guys like him, and you misused a lot of the X Division. So if this means Mark Andrews gets to have better storylines, or actually a storyline going forward, gets to have more exposure, then I'm all for it. I look forward to seeing the UK Championship, even though there is a litany of problems that come about with that, you know, with the WWE sort of taking over in the UK and all the negatives that come with that in their independent wrestling scene. So I have mixed bag, really, about a lot of the UK Championship. Excited for a lot of these guys and excited to see them work and see what they can do. But there are certain things lurking in the background that sort of cloud my, anticipation of it.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I didn't really even think about it that way, in that they're sort of cutting off the UK indie scene at the knees there. Like they want to go in, you know, they obviously have the World of Sport Wrestling that just started up on ITV, which is the reason that this UK tournament is happening in the first place. Like WWE can't let anybody else have nice things when the most like successful part of their entire business is when somebody else had something almost as nice as they did, and they were able to compete. Like, it just let somebody else get big, and they can, you know, maybe they do sort of have like a backdoor deal with New Japan, because they mention them a lot on TV, and at least in the last few months they have, and maybe they're gonna let New Japan try and take a shot at being number two here in the States for you know, a prolonged period of time, and drive that competition again. But yeah, I think it's, you know, that sort of sucks for the UK indie scene, is that now basically all of their top guys have been sucked into this UK tournament in some sort of exclusive contract, I'm sure. That, you know, great point on that. Again, something I didn't necessarily think of. But this was the longest intro in the history of the Next Level Wrestling podcast, so I do want to do like a formal introduction here. Guys, as always, I'm your host, the Andrew Bello, and I'm joined by my guest for this evening, Josh Perry, taking some time away from studies to join me here for a Next Level Wrestling podcast here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. We're going to get into episode 372 of NXT in just a minute, but before we do, I'm trying to get better on these plugs, guys. So in the wake of Wrestle Kingdom, I would strongly suggest that everybody go out and check out the Strong Style Central podcast on our network. Mike and Jason are just super New Japan marks, and they know just about all there is to know about New Japan wrestling, and they broke down the card in a pretty spectacular fashion, so definitely go check that out. And as always, go to our website, thewwpn.com. We're going to have the YouTube page linked up to it soon. All the information about our podcasts, all of our hosts, yada, yada. So check that out for sure. And, as I mentioned, the YouTube network, go ahead and, just go to YouTube, type in Wrestling World Podcast Network. You'll see us. You'll see my face. You'll see CJ's face. And we're going to see Josh's face on there soon if I got to drag him in front of a camera.
You don't want to see this ugly mug.
All right, never mind. We are not going to see Josh's face.
It's a radio face, baby.
All right. Well, hey, luckily we are. I guess this is sort of radio. Are you? I don't know. You sounded sort of serious.
No, I mean, I'd gladly do a video if I'm not, spending my entire days reading ridiculous material.
Well, yeah, I'm far removed from school, although not quite as removed as you'd imagine I'd be at my age. But I took a few extra years. Let's say I took a part a year, and I'm not reading a whole lot of useless materials. However, I now am at a job, and I'm fielding a lot of stupid questions from even stupider people, all supposedly college graduates too. It's very strange.
Degree anyway?
No, especially one from UPenn or Brown or what, these really, well touted schools that I field questions from their alumni on a daily basis, and they're all idiots. But yeah, let's hope that never gets to my job. Yeah, useless degrees. So episode 372 of NXT, I wrote here, we're back in Full Sail, yay, because we've been getting these pre-taped kind of house shows, but Percy Watson's back, boo. Yeah. Your thoughts on, you know, I guess just having new tapings, you know, the last couple of weeks have sort of disappointed me. I love NXT for the storytelling, and there hasn't really been a story told for the last couple of weeks. Excited about this new, you know, this new venture in NXT, as I guess we're building towards not only the Rumble, but ultimately Mania here, really.
As much as I despise the Full Sail crowd, I am definitely happy to be back in Full Sail, not due to Full Sail itself, but due to what it means in that we do get new storylines going forward. This is, like you said, they haven't really told many stories over the past few weeks. They have felt like house shows, really, and it's because it's what they were. But it is that time of year. It is the time of year, you know, in that lull between, you know, mid to early December until, you know, early January when we start building for the Royal Rumble and TakeOver. So they typically kind of zone out a little bit during this time of year. And so if NXT's zoning out, and if them taking a couple weeks off means, you know, 2 weeks of Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura in main events, I guess there are worse things to complain about, even though the fact that the show itself not nearly as compelling as when NXT is building stories and is consistently delivering in matches at the same time. So I was excited to see this return back to Orlando and get the show rolling again.
Yeah, I mean, those shows that they had last 2 weeks, like I've probably belabored this a little too much on the last couple of weeks of the podcast, like, they weren't bad shows. There was good wrestling, but you know, I tune in every Wednesday to see, you know, how the story's progressing, like what's going on with DIY, like what's happening with the Revival now, and who's Asuka gonna fight next. Like, I'm like, you know, I'm intrigued. Like, the storytelling's very good. It's treated, you know, in my mind at least, more almost like a television show, because probably also because I watch Lucha Underground right after it usually, and my mind's in the same mindset with that show in particular. But yeah, I mean, it was good wrestling. If they just told me, like, hey, we're airing these house shows, like, on a Friday night, we're just going to throw them up on the network, have fun, cool. But give me my TV on Wednesday. We do start off, though, I will say, you know, not for nothing, we start off with a hell of a segment for the beginning of the tapings here. We get the Aussie Mean Girls, Billie Kay and Peyton Royce, attacking Asuka outside the arena. Billie Kay with the weakest paper cup throw in the history of paper cup throws, as she, like, ever so slightly lobs this thing onto Asuka's forehead. But they, you know, they end up having a match shortly thereafter. They beat up some jobbers. They cheat to win to beat the jobbers, which I thought was kind of shitty. They come out and they kind of talk shit about Asuka. Asuka comes out despite several referees trying to hold her back, and clearly she's still injured from the attack. Nikki Cross comes out to help Asuka, supposedly, and then once the Aussie Mean Girls retreat, Nikki Cross hits Asuka with a pretty vicious dropkick, and we have shenanigans in the women's division. We went from no, you know, contenders for Asuka to three. What'd you think about this segment?
So, going all the way back to the opening segment, unbelievable that they were just beating up Asuka in front of this group of dudes. Did you notice this? To the left of them, like, next to them on the bus, there was these group of guys just standing there, not reacting at all to the fact that a woman was being beaten up by two other women right next to them. I thought that was a stunning oversight on their part and the producer's part. But anyway, the match itself was whatever. Apparently, one of them is in the performance center. I think it was the one with the long ponytail. And I don't really know much about the two jobbers, but I thought they did perfectly fine. And I dig Billie Kay and Peyton Royce. I don't know, you know, the real purpose in the tag matches, really. I mean, I understand, you know, they're not necessarily a tag team, but they are just, you know, friends that, you know, use each other to cheat and win and that kind of thing. And as we'll get onto the later episode, they've kind of both inserted themselves into the title mixture. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here without, you know, any sort of gold to chase as a tag team. They are singles wrestlers at the end of the day. I enjoyed seeing Nikki Cross come out. I was disappointed because I thought that she was just going to come out there and save Asuka. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But then thankfully, she ended up attacking Asuka as well. So lots of stories, like you said, being injected into this women's division, which definitely needed them because it's been a long lull for this women's division between, I think, maybe the last challenger was Liv Morgan, if I can remember that correctly. I don't even remember. But, yeah, I was surprised to see no Ember Moon in this, but keep her win streak going. Get this, you know, all these four with Bayley Kay, Peyton Royce, and Nikki Cross and Asuka, just have them all come together in this main event scene, and I think it's good for the women to actually have a main event scene right now.
Yeah, and we get a couple of backstage segments that sort of add on to all of this a little later on. Well, actually, immediately after the segment, we get Sanity walking into the backstage area. The brand new, yet another smoking hot backstage interview girl walks over and tries to get a word in before she even does. Nikki Cross just says, you know, she's going to take that NXT Women's Championship. And Eric Young adds on by saying, you know, we said we're going to take. This is where it starts. So that's, you know, that's a cool little, another little bit of development for Sanity as a whole. Like, they're going to take over and they're starting with the women's division. And then later on in the night.
Well, right after that, another development for Sanity as they walked away, Big Damo standing in the background, looking them up and down. So they're continuing with that, just him looking at them and observing them. Interesting that they haven't really pulled a trigger on it or anything right now. And I don't know, are they taking too long to pull the trigger in your mind? I think it's starting to overstay its welcome with him just looking at them and them not doing anything, no interactions. It's just he's there, they're there, he's looking at them. I don't know, it doesn't add intrigue to me. It just seems a little contrived.
Yeah, I actually didn't even write any notes down about that because I completely forgot about Damo and the whole situation there. But yeah, I think it's a slow enough build to where I'm not really interested. Like, I kind of feel he's going to join them eventually, right? Like, or he's going to feud with them. And neither way do I particularly care. I don't think it's going to make Damo look great to beat up Sanity. And Sanity's been, you know, I love Eric Young. Like, I'd love to see him get, like, a big push with this. Like, once they take over the women's division, you know, go on to the tag division and move on up to an NXT title contention, maybe somewhere down the road for Eric Young. I'd love to see something like that. But I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about Damo, and they're not telling me a whole lot about him right now. So I'm not very much invested in what's going on with him at the moment. But, you know, in addition to that other segment there with Nikki Cross, like I said, I mean, we might as well just get to it since we're talking about the women. At the end of the night, the very, very end of the night, William Regal's in the backstage, you know, in his office doing a little bit of an interview, making a couple of announcements, and Asuka walks in. She's frazzled, vulnerable, you know, crying, screaming, you know, make the match for NXT TakeOver. And he goes, with who? And she goes, all of them. Fucking awesome. Your
best
thoughts?
Best sort of promo or anything that Asuka has done in WWE. It was utterly fantastic. Loved, like, the paint on her face being streamed down through the tears and through the struggles. She was on fire all night long from when she came out to try and take on Billy Kay and Peyton Royce to begin the night to at the end of the night when she's busting into Regal's office, like you said. Just great stuff from Asuka tonight, and really happy to see her progress as much as she has.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself at the beginning of the night when they throw the, you know, the Aussie girls into the mix, where I thought it was pretty clear that it was going to be Asuka and Nikki Cross. Now these two have really, you know, propelled themselves into not only the match, but, you know, the main event scene. They've been kind of knocking at the door, but now it's like undeniable. They're going after Asuka. Asuka's pissed at them. Nikki Cross, same thing with all of them going on there. So I went from thinking like, wow, this is sort of weird. Like, Asuka's kind of keeping all of these women up on her level, and now it's like, damn, we actually have like a really compelling story with Asuka for the first time, you know, since maybe her battle with Bayley or Nia Jax. I guess there was sort of some good story going on there, but for the most part, to me, she's all character, she's all you know, in-ring work, and we haven't really gotten like a good solid story out of Asuka because she hasn't been vulnerable up until now. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this all progresses, and it looks like we have a babyface Asuka now. They just decided, hey, you know, she'll be a babyface for this month, and we're all going to just go along with it because she's awesome.
Making Big Show proud.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, she is on Big Show track right now. And she doesn't even, like, turn, like, it's not like she attack somebody and then save somebody and attack somebody and save somebody. Like, she just, any given week, they could just write her as a heel or a face, and it's, and it'll work because she's awesome. She's just very, very good at what she does. Her character is as solid as any down there in NXT. But yeah, that's more or less it for the women. It looks like we're getting a four-way at TakeOver San Antonio. So your thoughts on how that match goes, I guess early predictions, and do we get a Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, like, quick try and pin one another spot?
I don't know if we'll get dissension in the ranks between Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. I do think that them two teaming up in a fatal four-way against Asuka is a good, compelling story to tell with Asuka. It's tough for, you know, when you have somebody as built as Asuka, it's going to be tough to suspend the belief that, of course, she's going to retain. Obviously, we see that every Monday night on Raw, in that, you know, when Roman has a match, it's, you feel like you know the outcome. When Asuka has a match, you almost feel the same way, in that, you know, she hasn't lost yet, and why would Asuka lose? So, you know, why should I suspend my disbelief, you know, and think that she might lose? And so I think that having the numbers game team up against her, and then having the wild card of Nikki Cross, they're building to a good story in that fatal four-way that I think can really tell a compelling match. And I have full confidence in all four of these women to put on a good match. I think that Billy Kay and Peyton Royce have impressed in the ring. They haven't had a big match like this where they can prove it. It is a four-way match, so they can play to their strengths, maybe potentially hide some weaknesses. So definitely think this is a good way to go with the women. They need these multi-woman matches to establish who is at the top of the division, establish who that main event scene is. And so I like everything about this build. So they don't have very much time to do it, but I think that they've done a good enough job building up Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, characterizing them, showing off the... pun intended, insanity of Nikki Cross, and of course everybody knows and loves Asuka, so I think that they've done a good job, and finally, I mean, it's taken a while, but I feel like the women's division's getting back on track now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love this whole build, and, you know, taking a complete 180 from there, we get Elias Sampson in the next segment. I guess I'm coming around on him not necessarily having go home heat, which is the phrase of the night for the goddamn Full Sail crowd. Thankfully you pointed this out to me, because I would have been remiss in not mentioning it. But for those of you at home who are oblivious like myself, apparently Full Sail was chanting go home heat at Samson. He comes out, he does his song and dance, he beats up on a jobber, he hits his new Crossroads-esque finish, and I guess the highlight of this match really was the Full Sail crowd being a bunch of assholes. What did you think about this segment? What do you think about Samson?
I literally audibly said yes when Samson's music hit. I love how much heat this guy gets. Oh my god. And he just gets progressively worse in his singing and in his playing week to week. It's they've done such a good job of turning what I think that they thought was going to be a popular gimmick or something that people would think is cool, and they've turned it into something that is generating a ton of heat. I think that these squash matches aren't doing him any favors, though, with him, you know, not just wrecking through the jobbers that he goes up against. You know, 321 was the time in this match, and I think that that's about 2 minutes too long if you really want to have a good effective squash match for a heel. So I think that Elias Sampson has got a gimmick that just draws heat that you just don't see anymore. I mean, hit between him and Eva Marie, they've done such a good job at honing these gimmicks in. So it's not go home heat, you idiots at Full Sail. You're booing him because you don't like him, okay? You can blame it on, oh, I think the gimmick's dumb. No, you don't like him, okay? You don't like him coming out there and interrupting the show with his playing his guitar and, you know, his shushing the crowd. I mean, he's working you, okay? And I think that that's what I love so much, is that he's such an effective heel in an era where we really don't have too many effective heels. I can count the number that WWE has on one hand.
Yeah, and four of those fingers would be the Miz, but
at least three of the fingers.
Yeah, and deservedly so. The man is a heat magnet, but I guess I'll admit here, like, I'm getting worked. I don't like this motherfucker. I don't want him on my television. I'm just not a fan of his. Like, I love the Eva Marie thing. Like, the whole her whole run in NXT, I thought was great, minus the in-ring work. Her whole little SmackDown, like, I'm just showing up, maybe I'm not, sort of gimmick was great. Like, I like that kind of heat. Like, I like when a character is like that. I just don't think, I don't know, like, I immediately look at him with the guitar and I think Jeff Jarrett, and I fucking hated Jeff Jarrett too when I was a kid and I was a little mark and I didn't know any better. But you know, I don't know, maybe there's just something innately about him I don't like. So maybe I am getting worked. I'm getting worked.
It's good to have people that you genuinely hate, though, you know? I mean, like, it's I like it when people hate on a wrestler so much, and I appreciate the ability to actually do that these days, when it seems like if you're an effective heel, the audience instantly just picks up on it, and they're like, oh, this is great, this guy's, you know, he's healing it up so good. But I love it when it kind of goes under the radar like it does with Samson. But Full Sail, just shut up, guys, okay? You guys chanting go home heat. Okay, Drift Away is fine. Drift Away is, that's a funny chant. Plays off of him, and it, you know, that's a fine chant. Chanting the words go home heat, like, you know, you have just discovered gold or something with the fact that, ooh, we can say heat. Look how smart we are. We know so much about the wrestling business. Like, give it a rest, guys.
Yeah, the faux pas of chanting insider terms, like, don't cheer for the jobber either. Like, that's just, like, guys, it's a wrestling show. Like, you're, you know, just sit there, pretend you're 12 again, and enjoy it.
Let the jobber is the most obnoxious chant. They did that again on Tuesday night with Carmella and, you know, whoever that was, but...
Yeah, JB kept claiming that was Eva Marie without the makeup and extensions. So that's what we're going with.
He claimed a number of things, like she was Mae Young's granddaughter, but, you know, JBL's going to JBL.
Oh, no, not even JBL. From our network.
Oh, JB. Well, you know, JB and JBL, and actually that's a bigger parallel there than I thought that there might be.
Yeah, at the end of the day, there you go. JB, if you're listening, you are now the JBL of the Wrestling World Podcast Network. But I you know, as much as I'm getting worked by Samson here, I really feel like he needs, like, a really solid upper mid-card face for him to be, like, going after, and I will be all in on it. Because as of right now, like you said, he's going up against jobbers. You know, he's not he doesn't have anything really going on. And, like, the only person I could think of that fits the description is Ty Dillinger, who I don't want him anywhere near. But at the same time, like, if he came out and attacked Ty Dillinger next week, I'd have legitimate heat with him. I love Ty Dillinger. I would, you know, want him as the underdog babyface to overcome, you know, Elias Samson. Like, I would bite hook, line, and sinker on that storyline. But, you know, Samson needs, like, if Sami Zayn were still down in NXT, like, that would be perfect. Like, as much as I don't know how good he is in the ring, because we haven't seen a lot of it, I just think he needs like a lovable face to be going up against in order for all of us to, you know, really appreciate, you know, what he's doing right now. And we don't have that.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, it's like, when I was watching Samson, I was like, they need to get past the jobbers and they need to put him up against perfect example is what you said, Ty Dillinger, one of the most over guys in the entire promotion. So, you know, put the most hated guy against one of the most loved guys, and boom, you've got a program, and it's very simple.
Yeah, it literally writes itself. They should just, I don't know, I don't, like, again, I don't want him near Dillinger necessarily, but because I don't, you know, all the more emotion will come from it. So, you know, just NXT, just do right by me, guys. I love you. But, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, and I'm sure I'm going to love it. But we're going to end up going long tonight, man. I'm sorry that you got studying to do. But we have this next match here. This was a kick-ass match between San Almas and Oney Lorcan, in my opinion. I love the match that they had in Osaka. I sort of chalked it up at the time to the fact that Almas has a connection with Japan, having worked there for a while as La Sombra. And Oney Lorcan is just the type of dude that Japanese wrestling fans fucking love. Like, he's just Kyle O'Reilly, Daniel Bryan. He's just got that feisty, no-nonsense, like, I'm just going out there to kick your head in. He's almost got, like, a Shibata kind of thing going on. But, yeah, I thought that was sort of just because of the setting in Japan, and boy, was I wrong. These boys put on another really, really good match. I wrote down a ton of notes here. So Almas, early on in the match, does his little swimsuit tranquilo pose, and Oney Lorcan doesn't give a shit. He hits him with a running drop kick, and then on the outside, a blockbuster from the stairs to the floor. Tom Phillips goes ahead and just outright says it. Oney Lorcan don't give a damn, which, if that's his character, first and foremost, put that on a t-shirt. And second of all, like, that's great. That just sums him up perfectly. Almas, with a little bit of smuggish, heelish work, he does a running slap, and then he kind of just stands on Lorcan's chest for a little while. Almas with a near fall off of a drop kick into a Fujiwara armbar. Lorcan goes, comes back on a ramp with just a rampage of elbows, kicks, and knees. Almas cuts him off with a flurry of elbows. Lorcan drives him into the corner, and we do get the referee trying to distract, sort of distracting Lorcan as Lorcan goes to attack Almas, who's still in the ropes. And Almas uses the ref's distraction to kick Lorcan in the gut, hit him with his arm trap DDT for the finish. Spectacular match. What did you think about this?
In just 5 minutes, they conveyed a ton in this match. I think, and I'm surprised that Oney Lorcan, that name will never get better with me.
No, me neither.
I am surprised that he is as over as he is. He was over when they had this match in Osaka. He's over again in Full Sail. And he hasn't had, I don't even think, any character development or any character work at all. But he conveys a hell of a lot when he's in that ring, because his style is awesomely aggressive. It's awesomely hard-hitting without a single ounce of heelishness to it. It's definitely, it's an aggressive, all-out style that earns the fans, respect, and they enjoy watching his matches. And it's not like he's doing anything, inappropriate, or he's not doing any heel tactics. He's just going out there and kicking ass and just doing this really fast-paced, hard-hitting style. So, like you said, this is a really good match, especially given the time. Like I said, it was just over 5 minutes. I think that Almas, there's so many tweaks they need to make with this guy, but again, he's another guy that's in ring. He conveys a lot, and he's able to do a lot. So both these guys have great stuff in ring. If this is going to be a program going forward, given that they both have traded wins now, they need to have more character development. Almas has got to change up the entrance, change up the music. He's still got this babyface music with, like, claps going on in the background. Like, nobody should be clapping for a heel. He's a self-indulgent asshole, and that's what he should be. He should be playing that up. I read online, somebody commented that he should be cutting, like, he started to cut a promo in Spanish afterwards and then stopped. I think that he could just cut promos in Spanish and just, talk down to the Full Sail crowd without them knowing it and just drive them nuts that they can't understand him. And so, things like that. There's multiple things you can do with Almas that I think would improve him. And Lorcan, just give him something to do. I mean, I have no idea what his motivations are, who he is. I don't know anything about this guy. So hopefully, if this is a program going forward, we do get to see a fleshing out of these two characters, because, like we both have said, great stuff in ring. Just needs a little bit of emphasis to the outside of the ring.
Yeah, I've really been appreciating Almas's heel work, but yeah, I think he could go a little bit farther with it. He's in a tough spot, because he's one of those heels that, because he's this smarmy, arrogant narcissist, like, it's sort of cool. Like, he's fallen into the same deal as Los Ingobernables are falling into in New Japan, is that they're such cocky assholes, like, people fucking love them. Like, I don't know, Almas certainly not getting quite that much adulation here, but he's really good at the heel thing, and the whole tranquilo spot that he does, and he hit a Destino in that Osaka match, which is Naito's finish. I really like what he's doing, but yeah, it's almost at the same time, like, I'm appreciating it to the point to where, like, I don't hate him at all. He's being kind of smarmy. He's almost like Alberto Del Rio without the cars right now, and that's, it is what it is, I guess. But I think, like you said, like, there could certainly be some more development. I would love to see him just exclusively cut promos in Spanish. But I'd also like to see him just kind of be the kind of guy that would just, like, attack you backstage for no reason in the middle of an interview, and maybe try and get some heat that way. But like you said, I hope we see more of these two. If you give them, like, 15 minutes in San Antonio, and, like, I'm going to be all for it. I think that would be a really, really good match if they gave him that kind of time.
I agree. I forgot that in his post-match promo, he did end up calling out Roderick Strong, so I think that that's probably what they're going to go with instead.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not, not a fan of Roderick Strong as a face. I think I said this last time I was on here with you, is that he's so good as a heel, and he's got the look of a heel. He can wrestle in ring as a heel. He can cut the promos of a heel. The guy is a natural heel, and I just don't know about either him nor Almas getting a whole lot of heat behind them or against them, you know, in this feud going forward. But we'll see. I hope I'm proven wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that Roddy could be a better heel as well. But, like, the heel Roddy I know is the type of Roddy that's, like, punching dudes in the front row at PWG and calling them, you know, homophobic slurs. So I don't know that could happen in NXT. I haven't seen a lot of Roddy as a heel outside of that setting, so maybe I've got some back tape to watch.
I know him from PWG as well. That's where I base it off of. So and it's like similar formats, just make it a little bit more PG. You know, you can continue to mess with the Full Sail crowd just as you do with the American Legion Post. So I don't see him as a face going over too well, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong as well. But I hope Roddy gets a chance to show what he could do in that fatal four-way match that they had. I mean, he busted out just about everything in his bag of tricks except for the end of Heartache, and he put on a really good show considering he went out of it pretty early in the elimination match. But the more Roderick Strong we get in ring, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And hopefully they don't screw his character up to the point to where they don't have any reason to invest any more in him. You know, I'd like to see him up in the main event scene relatively soon. Once Joe and Nakamura go up to the main roster, he'd be a good guy to slide in to that main event scene. But we get a almost like a curtain call match here at the end of the show between DIY and The Revival. Before we get into this, one question for you, sir. You can watch one wrestling match for the rest of your life. DIY Revival 2 out of 3 falls, or Okada Omega from Wrestle Kingdom 11? Okay. What are you taking?
You know, as good as Revival and DIY were, I got to go with Okada Omega just because it's just that damn good. Both those matches are just absolutely brilliant in my opinion, but Omega Okada goes into lore of, you know, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels. But before we get into this match, we did have that Nakamura interview. It was short, it was brief, it was setting up his future with Bobby Roode. You know, Knox getting better at his English, and they had a ticket stub from Roode. What do you think about this interview?
You're also sort of cutting out a little bit, but if you can hear me, I'm going to keep going here. I think with Nakamura, as much as I know that they see the big picture with him, and he's going to be a megastar, he's going to be up on the main roster eventually, they're going to make a big deal out of him, especially, you know, if they can try and draw a lot, a good chunk of the Japanese market in with him, they're going to do it. But I think they could take a page out of Asuka's book with him a little bit. I love Nakamura. I don't have any issue with how he speaks. I just think as short as his responses were tonight, I think they could be shorter. Like if they had asked, I think Tom Phillips asked him, you know, what do you think about, what was your reaction to Bobby Roode being the number one contender? I think he should have just looked at Tom Phillips, said glorious, smiled, and walked off. And that's like it. You get one word out, like he does sort of the Asuka bit. Maybe they don't want to run those two too close together, but you know, it just shows like, all right, that's cool. Like, but I don't care who it is. Bobby Roode's as good as anybody else, I guess. I'm gonna beat him. I'm still the King of Strong Style. And he says it all with like one word and a smile. And you know, like I think that's the type of promo work that they need for him. Is, you know, the less he's saying and the more he could say with less, the better off that they're gonna be. As much as the responses were short tonight, but they were sort of like generic. They're not becoming of the King of Strong Style, in my opinion. What did you think about that particular spot there?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I don't think that he should be, like you said, he should not necessarily like a silent killer, not necessarily the same as Asuka, but a guy that just lets his charisma and lets his in-ring do the talking. Because unlike, you know, because I just had just said that Oney Lorcan, you know, needs a little bit of development outside of the ring, because he does a lot of great characterization in ring, but needs a little bit of something outside of the ring. I don't get that feeling with Nakamura. It's not just because of, you know, all the stuff that we've seen in the past in New Japan or any of his awesome performances, but it's like the guy is so incredibly unique. He's such a alluring figure. I mean, he has charisma for days that is naturally exuded without any need to cut a promo. So I don't think that they need to make him do this, and I don't think it benefits him at all. So I don't really understand it, but it's obviously the way that they're going with it. They're obviously keen on him staying down there and trying to develop his promo abilities. So I hope the best for him, but I just think it's misguided. But, you know, outside of that interview, we do have this main event. To throw that question back at you, you know, Omega Okada or DIY Revival 2 out of 3 Falls, which one are you going with?
Wow. I'd probably go with the Revival DIY.
Wow,
okay. I'm a sucker for a gimmick match. So like 2 out of 3 falls and a tag team match. Like there was just a lot more going on. That rivalry was like as good as you're going to get in WWE in particular. Obviously, you know, like I said before, New Japan has long-term storytelling down, and we haven't seen the end of Okada Omega. So I don't really know how that story ends just yet. I think we've now probably seen the end of DIY Revival, at least in NXT. So looking back on it, I mean, that match was just so good. Like I've been on so many near falls. I was jumping off my couch. Like it was one of those, like I was there, even though I was just sitting at home on my couch kind of moments where I guess I had that with Okada and Omega. It's just, you know, the straight up one-on-one main event, you know, big money match kind of thing. Like it a lot of it had to do with the feel and not necessarily, I don't know, the match itself in my mind. Like the match was great. It's hard to like criticize anything that happened there other than, and I did say this on Red Zone, the ref in New Japan, fuck Red Shoes, man. Like that guy ruined a lot of near falls for me in that match because he just choreographs the shit out of them.
I know whenever I bring that, whenever I bring up refereeing to an avid New Japan watcher, they go on this rant about how it's the way it is or whatever, but all throughout that night and throughout a lot of New Japan shows, they just miss a lot of stuff. I don't know. It's obnoxious, but let's get into this main event.
Yeah, I didn't take a lot of notes down, as I tend to do with NXT on a weekly basis. Is like I try to take a lot of notes for all the earlier stuff because I know I'm going to probably forget it. But the main event, I just kind of sat down and absorbed it and took it in for what it was. So on this match, I mean, I thought it started off a little bit slow. And almost a little bit of sloppiness out of the Revival, where they're usually just so crisp on everything, on every little tactic and move and tag. And there were, you know, like I said, a little sloppy, not, you know, by any means reckless or completely out of character, but you could just tell the urgency wasn't there. And there wasn't like the level of psychology that they would put into like a big takeover match, because there was like a spot in this match where there was sort of a reset. Dash Wilder gets up and makes the tag to Dawson. They go over and they claim Ciampa, and then they immediately like throw him off the ropes to the other side and Gargano tags in, which is like the complete opposite of what the Revival would do on a normal basis. They throw him back into the corner and they'd start putting the boots to him and keep him as far away from Gargano as possible. So it was sort of like a greatest hits match, almost like a farewell tour. They ran a lot of the same spots that they had run in previous matches, and DIY goes over. Sort of thought the Authors of Pain were going to come out and just interrupt this match, but we do get them coming out at the very end here. What did you think of the match? What did you think about the setup with the Authors of Pain?
I thought the match was just brilliant, especially for a TV main event. This guy's got like 15 minutes to go, and they just went at it. I loved the finality of the finish. I think that it's a great way to cap off what's been a great feud. With that running double knee or kick or whatever to both members of the Revival, then pinning both.
Yeah, they were like hugging too. That was
yeah,
the best.
And then just pinning them both at the end. I just think it felt like a takeover match, really, with the takeover send off at the end. I was kind of surprised they didn't have this match in one of the Melbourne or Osaka shows, considering the big crowds over there. But I mean, this was just a fantastic main event. I think that Gargano and Gable might be the two best sellers for hot tags in WWE right now, and that those guys can do a great job of, you know, selling an injury and then building up steam to get that hot tag finally. And Ciampa's a great hot tag as well. But there's so much good in this match. Scott Dawson repeatedly telling the referee that he's off, I'm off, you know, when the referee's trying to, you know, separate them in the against the ropes or anything. He's a national treasure. Dash Wilder was great in some of his, you know, that shoulder tackle into the knee, which set up, you know, the extended period of time in which they were working over the knee. Just such a great storytelling, and just, I mean, what more could you ask for from the Revival? I mean, these guys are just so damn good. I fear for them on the main roster, as I fear for almost half of the NXT call-ups that they make, because I just don't trust the main roster for anything. But I really just think these guys are so damn good at what they do. They've really gotten DIY into another echelon. And moving forward for DIY, we do have the Authors of Pain going forward. And, you know, the Authors of Pain, I think that they've got a decent look. And I was a lot higher on them when they first started out than what they are now. Because when they first came out, I was like, oh my god, Paul Ellering managing these two nameless destroyers that are just, they look like monsters. Oh my god, this is going to be awesome. And I think that Ellering's promos have been a little wayward. They haven't been too great. And despite the fact that Paul Ellering is just fantastic, and I just hate to say that anything he does isn't great, but I haven't been too enthralled with any of his promos. And I don't think that their offense is particularly as vicious as it could be, so I hope that the DIY can really carry them to a good match. But I'm still, jury's still out on the Authors of Pain for me.
Yeah, I like the idea of this feud, because DIY is your you know, another one of these just like vanilla shit baby faces that you just love. And the DIY were, I mean, the Revival rather, were sort of smarmy cheating heels, and now they transition to like just big bruising monster heels. They don't need to cheat to win, although they will, because Ellering's shiesty like that. But there's just it's a cool, it feels fresh, even though it's still your pretty stereotypical, you know, almost like archetypal babyface heel dynamic. This should be an interesting couple matches at least. I don't know. I mean, the storytelling is—it's not really necessary in this case. It's David versus Goliath. It's pretty clear. You know, the Authors of Pain are going to just wreak havoc, and it's just a matter of whether or not DIY could take it and overcome. And I guess we're going to find out in San Antonio. But yeah, the match to me was, like I said, overall the match really wasn't tonight. While it was a great match, and it's like one of the better main events we're going to get for an NXT show, particularly a TV show, not a takeover. I mean, yeah, it was great, but they just don't have much more to do with DIY and the Revival. So I'm very happy to see them move on. Looking forward to them, you know, meeting back up in a couple of years on the main roster. If they have a WrestleMania match, like, it'll be epic. It was a kick-ass feud, two in a row for the Revival. It'll be interesting to see if they can overcome the Raw and or SmackDown. Well, I guess overcome the Raw booking or fit into the SmackDown booking. Because, as much of a Raw apologist as I am, it's been tough, man. It's been real tough the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, God, it just sucks to see such a talented roster just become the, it's not the Kevin Owens show, it's the Roman Reigns show, and everybody knows it.
Oh, God, I hope he isn't going over.
Yes. I hope prepare, he isn't prepare going yourself. Over. He's winning. He lost that title to Jericho. He's going to beat Owens, and then Owens and Jericho are going to feud for the U.S. title while Reigns just squanders with that Universal Championship. It's happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's few things in this world, Josh, I like more than being right. But the problem is that like 3 years ago, I kind of like made this mental note that the Royal Rumble in and of itself is now a heel pay-per-view, where they're going to try and get as much fucking heat on the company, on this booking, on everything as they possibly can at the Royal Rumble, so that in the 3 months to follow, WrestleMania looks like the greatest thing that's ever happened. And that's sort of what they've done for the last couple of years with the Roman show, and even Batista going over Roman and not having Daniel Bryan in that Rumble like 3 years ago. But I think my worst fear is coming true here. Not only do I think Reigns is winning, I think Styles is going to win that match against Cena, and Cena's coming in at 30 and winning that Rumble. I have just this weird fucking feeling.
No.
And that's how we're going to get AJ goes over 4-0 against Cena. But now Cena's got to overcome the odds at WrestleMania. I think that story's perfect, and I'm afraid that they're going to go with it. And if you made it this far on the podcast, you're a brave soul, and we appreciate your time. And so go ahead and check out the website, thewwpn.com. I'm sure we'll have the forum set up. This is literally like breaking news. This shit never happens to me. But we are, we're here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. It's an all-encompassing, all-interactive experience. We want to just interact with other wrestling fans and you know, just have a good time watching wrestling. It sounds like Josh is waxing on and waxing off over there, so we're going to go ahead and just get out of here for the night. Find me on Twitter at WWPN, WWPN Bello. That's WWPN, B as in boy, E-L-L-O. Check out the website, like I said. Like, share, subscribe, all of our stuff. We appreciate it. Check out the YouTube channel. And that's it for this week's episode of Next Level Wrestling Podcast. Peace, guys.